50-50 football on a Monday, and we feel as though we've lived the journey with a couple of these sides this season, so there's going to be highs and lows. There's going to be congratulations and commiserations. There's going to be Gito Clewellyn first. Gito, for a while it looked like it was a disaster. 12 points when Paul Clement turns up. Then for a while it looked like it was going to be all free and easy. Then it looked like it was going to be a disaster, and now you've stayed up. Is that a fair analysis of the way in which this season's gone?
It is. It's been up and down. It's been a roller coaster of emotions. I mean, the first half of the season was a disaster. Like you said, 12 points by New Year's Day looked utterly doomed after Francesco Guidolin and Bob Bradley had really wasted half the season. But then Clement came in, not a massive expectations, but somehow we've turned it around, and amazingly, with a game left to play, we're safe.
Yeah, the fact that it's a game left to play is because it's sort of quite remarkable, really. We all expected it to go down to the wire, but looking like it's fine. And it's just a mad season to look back on, isn't it? It must be for you, but from an outside point of view, and that Bob Boulder thing just sort of feels like, did that really happen? Do you know, it's all kind of a strange thing from a TV programme, really. I mean, you don't want to be too kind of, you know, condescending about him, really. You know, he's been a successful manager of sorts where he has been, but it just seems absolutely bizarre that took place. And the Hull have managed to... Swansea have managed to stay up, regardless.
It's incredible, really. I mean, the first half of the season was just a waste. It was just thrown away, really. And Francesco Guidolin, of course, then and the Bob Bradley. And then, you know, at Christmas, nobody saw any kind of hope. Nobody thought, you know, by any chance of taking over. When Clement did take over, we were thinking, oh, well, it's with a view to the championship and rebuilding when we go down. And lo and behold, we've somehow managed to turn it around. And it is an absolutely incredible turnaround.
Let's talk about the heroes then throughout the season. And he, I think one's quite clear again, even though he's coming for a little bit of criticism from some quarters, as we discussed last week. But Llorente's very much demonstrated a couple of things. Firstly, he's demonstrated his class. Secondly, he's demonstrated that he can cut the mustard in the Premier League. And I don't mean that in sort of a light way. I remember Liverpool buying Fernando Morientes back in 2005. And Morientes was a footballer steeped in class, actually a year or two younger than Llorente is now. But he never quite managed to find his feet properly. Whereas whilst he's had his injuries, he's had a couple of little issues, Llorente has powered Swansea to got them the goals that they need.
He's a massive reason, and without him, I don't think there's any way that we would have stayed up. I think his style is perfectly suited to Premier League, and it's perfectly suited for Swansea, really, because, you know, people do still associate the Swans with good passing football and playing the game the right way, as they used to say. And there's still an element of that, but when you've got your end there on the side, you've got somebody you can aim for, and you always need that focal point of the team, somebody up front to aim for. And you know, when you combine Gylfi Sigurdsson's right foot with Fernando Llorente, it's a fantastic combination.
And the signings in January, you've got both Tom Carroll there and Olsen, but coming, relatively unheralded to a certain extent. Even Olsen's come from a Norwich side who in the end don't even make the playoffs in the Championship, and were toiling through most of the season. Yet they've really had an impact as well, just in terms maybe of giving everyone a feel of positive forward momentum as much as anything else.
Yeah, I mean, January was massive. Quad was in no week enough for the first half of the season. And they were pretty basic signings, really. They were just plugging gaps which were glaringly obvious in the pitch. We needed a fullback in Olsen, and he's turned out to be one of the best players we needed. A little bit more intelligence in midfield, and Carroll provided that. We've just built. It just sort of plugged gaps. It worked out fantastically. We didn't go out and spend, £30 million on every player like Crystal Palace did. They weren't signings that were ever going to attract loads of attention, but they were just solid, reliable signings. Not much money spent, but they had a huge impact on our season.
So what do you want to see happen now then? I mean, obviously there's a big summer in terms of keeping hold of the players. You mentioned Llorente there, Sigurdsson, you know, is one being linked with well, just about everyone, I think, at the moment. And it's I guess it's building with the manager long term as well, because you know you've had, as you say, three different managers in a season now, and Clement looks like someone who, you know, it would be a good person to kind of tie down long term as well.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment we're just celebrating.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Trying to get over the fact that, well, we're actually going to be playing in the Premier League next season, which nobody expected to happen. But it has been raised that we've still got a tough summer ahead of us now. Duffy Sigurdsson, I'd be amazed if we managed to hold out on him, because he's just incredible. He should be playing in the top six, really, with his quality, and we've been lucky to have him. Same with Llorente, we may struggle to keep hold of him. Hopefully his age will deter a few buyers, or potential buyers, I should say, so there's a chance that we can keep hold of him. But, you know, that we to a certain extent, you know, got lucky this season, in the sense that the squad wasn't good enough. They just about managed to pull out the bag in the end, but it's going to take a lot of work over the summer to make sure that we don't end up in this situation, or even worse next season, because there's still problems there. The squad still needs to be improved. Last summer was just such a disaster, really, in the way it was handled. We have to learn mistakes, and we have to do better than we did this season.
I mean, it's worth pointing out as well that the sides who are coming up look like they might be able to tool up to give it a decent to put a decent fist of it together as well, no matter what happens at this point in the playoffs. But it is the sort of there's the hierarchy of the club as well. It's been a stiff learning curve for them. And you mentioned they're getting lucky, and you've mentioned celebrating it. And I think that's it's an interesting thing that, you know, even now after all of it, the thing you take from it still is we've got away with one here, and you know, it is that's why, if anything, that makes the celebration all the sweeter, I'm sure. But it does put pressure on everybody, doesn't it, to just be a little bit better next season?
It does. We've got lucky in several respects this season, in the sense that, you know, Paul Clement turned out to be a saviour in the end, but came after giving Guido an attempt at the start of the season, which never have happened. It came after giving Bob Bradley 11 games, which should never have happened. You know, the squad should, well, the rebuilding, well, the purchases we made last summer were dreadful, and the players we let go to, you know, it was real complacency around the place. I don't want to see that complacency return. We do have to, you know, because like you said, next season you've got Newcastle and Brighton coming up. Playoffs look strong too in the Championship. The league is going to be stronger. We were pushed on way by a Hull team who, you know, somehow managed to overcome their problems and put together a real, well, get their fight going, really, towards the end of the season. You know, we have to, it's just a matter of learning lessons and showing that actually we don't want to be in this position year after year after year, because eventually it always ends in relegation. We've seen that with the other clubs who've gone down over recent years. It is just a matter now of not thinking, oh, we stayed up this season, so everything's great. It's not. There's still a lot of work to do.
A last little thing as well before we let you go, because you mentioned it last week, the players paying for the tickets and the transport up to Sunderland. The game itself, I mean, you know, it was done and dusted by half time, and I think that must also have given the end a huge party feel as that game sort of going on, the feeling that not only have these players sort of delivered off the pitch, but they deliver on it as well. And you know, that was one of the things that you could, I mean, I could hear it on the radio, the raucousness of the Swansea atmosphere and the Swansea support. I thought it was terrific, to be honest. And it's easy to say, well, anyone would be like that, but you know, you've seen up and down the country that isn't always the case. And I think the thing I'm sort of trying to sort of give you the opportunity to point out is the depth of feeling for the football club in Swansea. You know, there's effectively two league clubs in Wales, with Wrexham still in the National League, and that having now been in the Premier League for so long, Swansea's potentially can become a pretty big club quite quickly, in terms of the fact that it's you're now nailed on as the leading Welsh club.
Yeah, and the scenes up in Sunderland on Saturday were incredible. It was probably the best away atmosphere that I can remember. Everybody who went up there went there knowing they had a part to play, you know, and the noise was just absolutely outstanding from start to finish. And like you said, it was the game actually probably summed up the way the team has played. Why we managed to stay up, really. It was just they were very professional. It wasn't going to win any match of the season competition. it was two goals in the first half and then hold on for the second 45 minutes. And that's kind of what we've been doing. It's just been a very, very professional approach to games under Paul Clement. It's not been thrills and spills. It's just been a matter of getting the job done, and that's how we've managed to stay up. And it was there was a real feeling after the match on Saturday that we'd done enough. The guy standing next to me, he was in his 50s and he was just crying tears rolling down his cheeks. You know, there was a feeling that we had done enough. And then, but it's nice at the same time the Palace managed to help us out and end the relegation a week early, because going into the final day, but you know, I'm not sure how we would have been able to handle the news had Hull won on Sunday.
Okay. Have you got next week?
We've got Everton.
Everton.
We've got West Bromwich Albion.
Everton, yeah. Albion, sorry. So, yeah, that's fine. It should be a nice day now anyway.
Yeah, it'll just be a party. Everybody will just know to escape and being able to actually enjoy it without any stress. Being able to enjoy a game of football without any stress for the first time since, well, last season.
Okay, huge thank you to Gito. And thank you to him for the contributions throughout the season that we've had, finding out exactly how Swansea are doing, the highs and the lows. He's very much given us both. And you can hear what I presume, Gito, have you done it yet? A very jubilant Jack cast.
Yeah, we will be recording tomorrow night, I believe. So that should be a rare positive podcast.
The Jackcast recording tomorrow night, presumably out after. Well, definitely out after that point. Maybe on Wednesday when you're listening to it. Bring cans. thanks so much to Gito, and we shall we should cross. John, have you got for us next lined up?
We're going to Crystal Palace.
We've got Robbie Scotcher you next. I tell you what, it's all the highs at the start of the show. I've got to let you know it's going to get worse as it wears on. Thanks to Gito, and now we're over to speak to Robbie about Crystal Palace. Marvellous, that mate. Thank you so much. He's gone. Robbie Scotcher said, Robbie, how are you? He said, go on, Robbie.
I'm hungover. I'm struggling. But it's the best hangover I've had all year.
I mean, it helps. What happens at the start of that game? Let's talk about the game for a minute or two. Because towards the end, I'll maintain, and I think it'll be interesting to see next season, but I'll maintain Crystal Palace have got a squad that's better than 14th, probably leads right the way through to 9th, and with Al Ice in charge, that's where I expect to see them make the home next season. But before we get on to that, Robbie, it really helps when an opposition defender does that in the opening minutes of a game, and certainly a big game like this one, a game that had the potential to be a tense game, nothing helps quite as much as that.
I mean, it was beforehand. Everyone was nervous. I didn't expect it to be as nervy feeling around the ground. It was a feeling that we'd do it, because I thought Sam would just set up not to lose, which is basically what he did. But yeah, it was really nervy, and we got in the ground. Everyone was singing. The ultras have done a massive display about the Palace badge, everything like that. And yeah, 3 minutes in, ridiculous. He scored the goal, and that was it. That was the end of the game right there.
He takes it really well, Zaha, doesn't he? Because you know he could have got a bit flustered. He's obviously not expecting that. It's very early in the game. I just thought it's a really kind of calm finish. I think you know sometimes you can just presume that these lads are going to score these, but coming so early, you know, as it did, and yeah, he just really takes his time and places it really well, I think.
Yeah, and he gambled. I mean, he gambled for that to happen. You don't expect it to happen, but he's gone to it, and he did it. He waits just a second before he slots it as well. You can see he sets up and just waits a second. Keeper goes, and yeah, that sort of chance is so easy that early on in the game, just to literally put it in rows. The amount of time you see that happen, but such a cool finish. And after that, do you know what? It was a really weird game because we did not play well. we did not play well at all. We won 4-0, but I mean, it was just one of those games that you're watching. I don't know how we scored 4 goals, if that. But I mean, Benteke, they didn't mark him. They didn't. You've got to mark Benteke for a corner. How do you not do that? I mean, in your game preparation, surely that's, you've got Dawson there. He's a great defender. I feel sorry for Hull, I really do. Their fans were brilliant. They were cheering. They were singing the whole way through. As it was getting towards the end of the game, they were all standing up. They were singing their team. It was, you know, I do really feel for them, but I'm glad it was us.
Well, it's you know, you mentioned it. How does it come about? The fourth is the ultimate sort of counter attacking goal late on. There's probably a couple of bits of luck in there. You know, you mentioned the opener. The opener's a little bit of luck, and obviously John's right to point out he takes it well. It might well be a penalty. I think it's a penalty watching it back, which a 2-0 might have changed things a little bit.
Yeah.
Even things like Maguire going down injured 2 minutes into the second half when he's already made 2 subs and therefore he's got to make his third, which removes his agency there, the manager, and probably just knocks the whole side. You know, the whole of that whole team's probably knocked at that point, Robbie. But you've still got to take the chances when they come, and that's what Crystal Palace did, and I think it shows that there's, you know, within that squad there's the potential to have a certain level of ruthlessness, which can bode well for next season now that they're out of this little bit of bother.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that happened this year, as we've spoke about before, Pardew was trying to change Palace into a team that sits back, soaks up the pressure and hits on the break, to a team that had possession, and when you have the ball, playing the ball, working openings, that sort of thing. And it just wasn't working out. So when Sam came in and we went back to that, we are ruthless. If you look at the games we won recently, and against great teams, I mean, we're the only team to beat Chelsea on their own ground this season. That's ridiculous. And it, because when we play like that, when it's set up tight, when you've got all, and you've got the right squad there, the right players on the break, I mean Townsend and Zaha are just ridiculous. Schlupp. 2 defensive headers, gets the ball on the box, and off he goes on his bike. And we're just watching it. 2-0, and you're just watching him run up the pitch, and you're like, he's going to score. Take it out. And then the penalty, like, who's going to take it? Luca, the cheekiest little penalty at 3-0. And you're just like, it just, I mean, what, right, afterwards, everyone in the pub's just going around going, yeah, we knew it was easy. We knew it, like, yeah, whatever.
I would like you. Go on. Sorry, mate.
No, it seemed easy. It did, but you're right. That whole game is down to, I feel for that player, but that ball going through, him missing it, Zaha, 1-0, 3 minutes on Sunday where they need to win. And there was points when we were 2-0, they had the ball so much and they were working openings. And, you know, if they were a much better team, we'd have lost the game. That's why it's the Premier League. You've got to score.
Yeah.
You've got to score.
I would like to point out the Liverpool one at Stamford Bridge as well. I'll be told off if David can't make that connection. But that was earlier in the season when they were rubbish. so kind of, I mean,
really funny yesterday on the Spurs menu. I mean, how many people lumped a tenner on 4-0 for Spurs to win 4-0?
Well, that's it, yeah.
Who had that at the start of the day?
Yeah, unreal. Unreal. I certainly didn't think Liverpool were going to do that. I mean, I asked the question to the Swansea fan before we spoke to as well, Guito, about what Swansea do this summer, and I guess it's a similar thing for Palace. You know, there'll be a couple of clubs, you know, sniffing over a few of the players. I'm sure Zaha especially is one that you'll be wanting to keep hold of, and then just adding as well. And is there any sort of particular areas where you think Palace need to be spending money?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think the keeper's the problem. I like Hennessy, but he's a backup keeper, and he lives in no man's land, I swear. The amount of times this season he's been caught just, you know, halfway here, nearly there, too slow to go down and make saves. We need a keeper. Tom Heaton apparently is someone we're looking at. Obviously, everyone's going to go for Jordan Pickering, but we do need another keeper. And in central defence, we've got a lot of players that are going to leave at the end of the season, I think. I think Damien Delaney, who I personally love, who embodies Palace, the way he plays everything. I think at 35 now, I think that's his last season for us. I think he's probably finished. So, you know, we're going to need players there. And another forward. You wouldn't think it, but we've got Loic Remy, who's been with us all season. I think he's played 2 games. And that was on loan. He's been injured. We had, Conor Wickham to come back would be great. We need another centre forward. And, yeah, if people go, it's who do we place? Kabay is an interesting one. I think maybe Kabay might go this year. And if he does, we're going to need someone in there. But I can't even think about that right now. I just want to think about the fact we stayed up.
Yeah,
I think it was going to happen.
I know. I'm doing far too much realism today. I'll be honest.
Yeah, what are you doing? That's ridiculous. Can't analyse it.
I know, I do apologise.
I mean, Palace fans, though, right? We've got to drink spree in Swansea all summer, surely.
Maybe.
I honestly think that you should get a regular train there and to and from. I don't think you'll be struggling for a pint, given the way in which that happened and the way it took the pressure off them. Just, you know, John's touched on it there. One more little thing is that sometimes seasons can sort of break for you, and they can you know, rather than do realism, let's do pure optimism. They can lead to opportunities, and this is now, you know, I mean not least because actually if Palace win one more game, there's every chance they finish 12th. But you know, it's very easy for the table to look really, really rather different, but there is a chance here, isn't there, to steal a bit of a march on. And it's a funny thing, Stoke could well still finish ahead of Palace as an example, but Stoke will go into the summer pretty depressed and with what looks like a ton of problems, whereas just off the way in which seasons gain a certain momentum, Palace get to go into it feeling optimistic and feeling as though where the squad improvements need to be made, they're not so much problems as opportunities to improve and grow.
Oh, totally. It's always interesting, isn't it? They talk about form. I mean, Leicester, I'm not saying we're going to win the league, by the way, before I say this, but Leicester had that amazing run to stay up. And then the next season, they carry on that run through the summer because how the club felt, they just kept going. And then, you know, they've won the league. I'm not saying we can do that. But what we can do is we can frustrate teams, big teams. We can get results against big teams. And you've got to look, as players wanting to come in, I think Palace is a huge opportunity for a lot of players. A lot of players to do, if you were going to pick a club to go to that you're not going to be in the top six, you might take a pop at going to Palace because, you know, you're going to get noticed. And who knows? Who knows what happens next season? But it's always going to be mental.
Oh, also, it's been fantastic speaking to Robbie right the way through the season. Maybe we'll grab him back on one last week, next week, or the week after. But thank him so much for his time on 50-50 Football, letting us know about the ups and downs with Palace. And now we do have to do the downs. We're shooting over. We're going to have a chat to Hull. Joined now by Les Motherby of the Amber Nectar fanzine. First thing to say, Les, let's accentuate the positive that's in front of us. I thought that the way in which what looked like the entirety of the Hull end stayed until the bitter end against Crystal Palace, despite the fourth going in, I thought it was absolutely admirable, to be honest with you. I think that those players and the manager should collectively feel, you know, that there's a real bond there. It would have been the easiest thing in the world, and I'll be honest, I get the privilege of supporting Liverpool. It would have been the easiest thing in the world to get off, but seeing the entire end stay and respond like that, I thought was different class.
Yeah, there definitely is a bond between the fans and the players. There's an understanding among the fan base that the problems at the club don't lie with the manager and the players. They lie much further than that, and I think Hull City fans want the players to know that we applaud their efforts, you know, and that we don't hold them responsible. I mean, the astounding thing about Marco Silva is that game 37 was still relevant. You know, our fate hadn't been decided at that point because, you know, if you'd have asked me in December, would you get to game 37 before you knew your fate? I'd said no. We'll know in a couple of weeks. We'll probably have an hour after the club's name about them, because everything seemed dark because of the way that the club had been set up over the summer, you know, shambolic action from our owners who had essentially chased out the most successful manager in the club's history, let us start the season with, you know, like barely enough players to play a five-a-side game. The setup of the entire thing was wrong, and it wasn't until January that they took some actions and thought, do you know what, maybe losing 150 million a year of revenue is a bad thing. Maybe we should spend some money now in a last-ditch attempt to see if we can stave off that. And it was done too late. If Marco Silva had had a full season, I think we'd have been looking at finishing where Bournemouth or Watford are. I think he's that good a manager. And what he's managed to do with what is essentially a bunch of misfits, because the players he's brought in on loan are all players who've essentially failed at other clubs. You know, you get Ranocchia, who, granted, he was an Italian international, but he's become a laughing stock in Italian football. I watched Sampdoria a couple of times a season, and I saw nearly all of his games last season when he was on loan from Inter, and he'd just become a joke of a player. But he got brought in and said, we need you to do a job. We brought in Markovic from Liverpool, Nia from Everton, players who had distinctly failed at other clubs. So Silva had done wonders to get some football out of those, but it was never going to be consistent, because that's the reason why they're not playing for the parent clubs regularly, because they can play well but just can't do it on a consistent basis. So there's only so much Marco Silva could do, and you can't transform the psychology of a player in a couple of months' time. That's something that takes a lot of work, and I think Silva had put us in a position where he'd wrung out some decent football from this group of players and given us a chance. But when we finally had the opportunity to take our destiny in our own hands against Sunderland, that's where the psychology failed and we couldn't do it. And we just lost that bit of coherence. Whatever the manager had drilled into them to go and play like, it clearly went out the window when they took the field. And I can't blame the manager for that at all. I think he's done an absolutely sterling job. And I wish him well on, you know, whatever he does next, because I don't think there's a cat and mouse chance of him wanting to stay at Hull City with our current set of the owners we've got.
Come on to the... I want to talk about the owners and the loanees in a minute, but let's go back to that Sunderland game. You mentioned there that it's just sort of the players themselves, the feeling that it was in their own hands suddenly, that they weren't battling against, that there was that they were in charge a little bit. It does appear to have been the thing which, and also the nature of the way that Sunderland side set up on the day as well. I mean, you know, I think that it would have been easier in a sense if Hull were playing a side who were 9th, 10th, 11th that day, rather than a side that will just turn up and just play dead and just look to pick you off, which is what happened. You know, all in it, it's a strange thing, the fixture list. Sometimes from nowhere you can end up with, you know, with a bit of a perfect storm that becomes that just doesn't suit your players on that particular day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the funny thing is, we didn't play particularly badly against Sunderland. It's just that the passing quite wasn't there. The fluidity of play wasn't there. It was just, there was just that slight nagging doubt. And we were coming up, and as you said, the perfect storm, we were coming up against Sunderland, they knew their fate, they'd been relegated. So all of that fear had gone, all of that anxiety had gone. So they were playing with a fair bit of freedom and just playing football. Quite why that didn't translate to playing Swansea at home this weekend is a little bit annoying. But, you know, I don't think you can expect really... You can't just start expecting other teams to do you any favours, and no teams have done us favours. But it is really annoying that Sunderland decided to lay down and be supine against Swansea, but come to the KCOM Stadium and, clear off with 3 points when they've done very little of that this year. But that's on us. We've failed. The question is just, what happens next? What is the state of Hull City going to be when we set up in August? Because the way they had us, I don't know, there's quite a famous picture that Tom Huddleston had tweeted, and it was the entire team in Austria. So you've got this beautiful mountainous backdrop of like 10 players, and that essentially was Hull City's senior squad. And if we, you know, and you question what happens now, are the owners just going to think, tell you what, let's just bleed the club of Premier League parachute payments and put out, you know, next to nothing, because they seem to have absolutely nothing but animosity towards the supporters. You know, they love the supporters for daring to love the club's identity and history. And we haven't got a glorious history, but that doesn't mean we're not proud of it. And we don't have a glorious identity, but we're proud of that. We're proud of the name, we're proud of the nickname, and we don't want to see those things messed with. And, you know, the owners have decided to take the ball home and take punitive action against the supporters. It'd be fascinating to see what punitive action they take next, because this year they got rid of any concessions whatsoever. You know, if you're a 3-year-old child, you pay the same as a working man. If you're a 8-year-old senior, you pay the same. Again, a couple of years ago, the concessions for disabled people. And it's just all things designed to punish us, because we wouldn't let them have the runway with the name. And of course, football fans take pride in the club's identity. You'd worry if they didn't. If a team just changes the crest on a whim and takes the club's name out of it, and people aren't upset, you'd wonder are they really supportive of the club? Because to me, that's what a supporter does naturally. You have a sense of affinity for all of the trappings of the club, and you don't like to see them messed with on a whim.
Going through all of that, then, what is the? This comes back to my constant sort of belief that football clubs should be like National Trust properties, frankly, and that it's ridiculous that they're not. But putting that to one side for a minute, where are the next battle lines going to be drawn? Because what I was looking at over the weekend when the goals were going in was what you've just said there. There's a lot of, it's a misfit side. A lot of them are on loan, so they disappear. The manager disappears. And I genuinely feel for Hull and the supporters, not just off the basis of relegation. Relegation happens to football teams all the time, but
yeah,
it's very easy to see a bit of a shell. So where do you see a battle line being drawn one last time? Do you see them doing the decent thing and getting out? Do you what on earth happens next year? Because I would be genuinely, and I am as a distant observer, concerned for Hull City.
And that's the question I think every Hull City fan is racking their brains with now. What next? Do we need to ramp this up in terms of protest? Because let me make it clear, getting kids to the Championship is not the worst thing in the world for Hull City. That isn't the issue.
Yeah.
And you might get some outside observers and say, really, who the hell do they think they are? Do they think they have a right to play in the Premier League? No, we don't. But we do think we've got a right to have some kind of input in the way the club's run. And we don't expect to be mocked and scorned and punished for, having some care for the club and the way it's run. So that is the question. There has been some talk of the last game of the season against Tottenham being about protest, and that's why it was important that the players felt that they're not held culpable, and the manager that they felt culpable, that we will still sing their name, we will still cheer them on. It's not about the players. There's a rottenness to the club that lies elsewhere. And I think this week will be interesting discussions about, whether this weekend will be used to protest the ownership of the club. Because it's not about being relegated to the Championship.
Yeah.
I accept that. I grew up in the club in the fourth division. Yeah. I remember yearly trips to Rochdale and Hartlepool. So going to bet now being, going to Nottingham Forest holds no fear for me whatsoever. But the fear is, it's the battle for the soul of the club, because there's a worry that the owners are just treating it like a husk. It's just a revenue generator. They see the club as nothing more than a player trading exchange and a TV content provider. And of course, football fans don't view it that way. They have a sense of ownership of the club. And our owners have gone from saying, oh yeah, you're right to think that you own the club, it truly is yours, to being told, this is our business, we'll do what we want with it and you'll just like it and lump it. And to me, you're not a real football fan if that doesn't stick in your craw a little bit.
Yeah, go on, John.
No, definitely. I mean, it's a sad state of affairs, and I think you've kind of got that across very eloquently, Les, in terms of what we want from our football clubs, really. And it should be a sense of pride, and it should be, we just want to be proud of the team out there. And all fans, you felt we're part of the team, at the weekend, even though they got beat 4-0. But, there's not the kind of the pride in the football club and the kind of outside of the players there, that there really should be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a football club is a community enterprise. You understand that there's a business element to it. That's not a problem. No, nobody's saying there shouldn't be any business consideration because, if clubs were run by the fans and they were doing playing on FIFA and think, oh, let's go spend this money, there has to be some kind of business side of it. But that cannot be the most important thing. And the sad thing is you get the feeling that our owners view the club as a sort of a football league franchise. There's a local Premier League or football league provider of professional football. And a football club is far more than that. And I think all City fans just want to feel that it's a football club again. They want to feel like it's a community endeavour and we're not just a rich man's plaything and something to scratch his own ego with. And that's the worry, not playing in the Championship. I don't mind playing in the Championship. It's fine. We've probably got we're going to have expectations of winning more than 10 games, which is about the absolute maximum expectation we've got when we're a Premier League side. So that's fine. But yeah, I'd like to have a bit of pride when I talk about the club, regardless of where they are in the Football League. To be honest, I mean, this thing with the name change has been rattling on for so long, and the Football Association twice told them you can't change the name. But the problem is, they had a Player of the Year award the other day, and all of the trophies had Hull City Tigers on it, and it's just like, the club isn't called Hull City Tigers.
And yeah.
You'll have people at the club saying, "No, there's absolutely no club message that we, you know, we won't call the club Hull City AFC." And you think, "Well, why is the club's YouTube channel called Hull Tigers then? And why do you only ever call the club the Tigers? Why don't you ever call them Hull City when you're doing announcements?" It's just little things like this, and you think this constant antagonisation of a fan base.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of supporters who I've known been going, you know, I've been going since 1983 when I was six. There's a lot of people who've gone a lot longer than me who just feel that the love and passion for the club has been taken for granted. And they just can't bear the hurt of going to watch the team anymore, which, you know, personally I find devastating.
Yeah, I know it is.
To see people I know who I looked up to when I was young as, like, that's what a football supporter is. That's somebody who really has the club at heart, who now feels it's just too painful to even go watch the local football team on a Saturday, and they're finding other things to do. And you can see it still bothers them. But, yeah, that's the worry now. It's a battle for the soul of Hull City. It's not about what division we're playing in 2017-18.
Okay. Huge thanks to Les. Maybe we'll speak to him again over the summer, either through 50-50 football or through the Anfield Wrap. Keeping an eye on what's happening at Hull there. And I hope that if there is any protests or action on Sunday next week, they go as well as they can. And maybe, just maybe, for someone's hand to change the way in which things are at Hull City. Huge thank you to him. Hull relegated off the back of the entire season, not just off one game at the weekend. He's very right to point that out, and the way in which the whole club's being run. And now we're going to shoot over, and we're at least going to try and end on a bit of a high. We're going to chat to Rebecca about Chelsea winning the title. From Hull City, over to Rebecca to talk to us about Chelsea. Rebecca, it's all done, all over. You felt like it was going to go in one of the two games across the Friday and the Monday, get it boxed off, the final win that was required. Didn't even need to go to Monday night, really. One late goal pushes Chelsea over the line.
Yes, sure. I think quite a few people would have guess any other goal scorer than Batshuayi to be the man to do it. I'm sure there were a few people deleting their tweets of why is Batshuayi on? Chelsea need a goal. But yeah, it was, I think it was a very Chelsea performance actually in the end, and it probably summarised why it was them that are league champions, because it was one of those games where if you took sort of a Liverpool or an Arsenal, a City, possibly even a Spurs and almost certainly a Man United, that they probably wouldn't have managed to find or grind out the win, whereas obviously Chelsea did, and it's just another example, really, isn't it, of why they've done it. And it's their bench again. Obviously, that's why it hasn't been the guy that we've spoken about, but it is another player that they have that they can bring on that has made the difference.
Yeah, and I think it's again, the bench is not seven deep. We've said this right the way through, but it's quite consistently three or four deep, and all the way through the season, you know, there's been on the one hand a little bit of luck with injuries, but on another hand, don't buy players who get injuries on a regular basis, and if you get some who do, sell them. That's a, you know, it's a perfectly good strategy and way to run a football club. And you know, I think it's difficult to argue with the fact that across the now 36 games that Chelsea have played, they've been the best team in the country, and therefore you end up with the title. It's not been, you know, Chelsea have already got 7 more points on the board than Leicester managed last season. City's first title, they get 89. I expect Chelsea break 90. All of that sort of stuff, Rebecca. This isn't necessarily as good as the Ancelotti side that wins the league, or certainly Mourinho's second side that win, second team that wins the league 05-06, which were an unbelievable side. But this is a very, very, very good team and the best team in the country this season.
Yeah, I mean, I saw what Klopp has said. I know Mourinho said it on many occasions, and Pochettino's probably had a voodoo doll of, you know, Hazard and Costa and David Luiz at times. But at the end of the day, no, Chelsea haven't had that many injuries. I think it has been very lucky. It's also obviously been that combination of they haven't had the other games either. They haven't had either the League Cup to worry about for the vast majority of the competition. Playing less games, obviously, reduces that risk. A very Michael Owen quote for you there. But I think as well, Chelsea do have the players that don't get injured. Obviously, Costa's known for it, but Hazard isn't known for being injured. David Luiz isn't known for being injured. Yep. You can count the number of, you know, games people like Cahill and Azpilicueta miss on one hand combined. So they aren't an injury-prone side, and I don't really think they ever have been. You know, bar sort of Mourinho's last final season when Man United ended up winning the league, I can't remember sitting there thinking, oh, my God, what are we going to do? You know, everybody is injured kind of thing. I don't think that's really ever happened to that extent. So, yeah, that's obviously hugely helped. But when you look at Chelsea, they are probably, you know, since the change in formation and the Arsenal-Liverpool games at the front end of the season, they probably are maybe not the most complete side in the league, because I would still argue Spurs have the most balanced squad in terms of an all-round. But Chelsea have, well, Conte, you know, massive credit to Conte, has looked at the formation, changed the club to what he needs it to be. He's changed the players. They were never going to even break top four with four at the back. So Conte's looked at it and thought, you know, I read a quote from Tony Pulis, and he said, Conte said, if I don't change the team will change me. So,
yeah.
You know, I think Conte's done what needed to be done. And yeah, I mean, I don't believe in ever in any circumstance saying if a team has won the league after 38 games, they don't deserve it. Of course they do. There's no, you know, something that has a cross line or an offside or penalties that shouldn't have happened or should have happened. There's no anything. If you've won the league after 38 games, you deserve to win that league. End of, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting that Batshuayi gets the goal that does it, because it's been a kind of a season of unlikely heroes, really, none more so than Victor Moses, who was obviously at Liverpool and, you know, didn't particularly look like he was going to become a world-class wing-back. I mean, I'm not quite sure that's what's happened, but it's been one of those seasons where a few lads have stepped up and done really well. But going into next season, he's going to need more players, isn't he, the manager? There's you know, Champions League football, and, you know, you can't presume maybe the luck with injuries will continue. So it's going to be a busy summer for Chelsea, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's obviously three ways to kind of go about that. The first way is look at what happened to Chelsea after the first time they won the league under, you know, Mourinho's second spell. They didn't strengthen that summer very much, didn't really do anything. That obviously has a knock-on effect with the players that have just won the league that might be a little bit complacent anyway. So I think from that point and that point alone, you do have to bring in players to keep your current players on their toes. But the second way to look at it is obviously, yeah, Victor Moses and Marcus Alonso have done very well this season. I don't think anybody would say they haven't, but on the flip side, you know, I've seen them get tore apart by a few wingers that you wouldn't expect, and you wouldn't want to kind of look at and think, yeah, they've just given them a torrid time today. I don't want that to be happening with Suarez and Neymar next season. So, yeah, Chelsea, of course, have to strengthen in terms of quality and upping the quality in certain positions. Again, Champions League comes more matches. I saw Arsene Wenger, bless his heart, explaining that it'll be harder for us next season in the Premier League and the Champions League, which, considering he's never won it and we have, that's a really funny piece of advice from him there. But, you know, it will get harder, and we all know that. I'm sure, you know, this season, if Chelsea do go on and win in the FA Cup final, which I'm thoroughly expecting, then that'll be another thing that they want to look and retain. And, yeah, this season was a big thing to win that Premier League title after, you know, the debacle of last season. But I am sure players like Hazard and Cahill will not want to falter again, because then you get this tag of, oh, you can do it once, but you can't do it again, yeah, you know, straight after. Why is that? And then the third and final thing is, obviously, I know Conte's pushing for money already because the man has a brain, but he's also said, you know, four players are either leaving or have left in Terry, Ivanovic, Oscar, and obviously John Obi Mikel. So he is going to need to replace them, because the squad has been very thin at times, I think. And sadly, I just, bar maybe Aki, I just don't think the youth is going to be used. So, you know, big names are obviously going to come in the summer.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And by the way, Liverpool will buy Ake if you want. I'll sort that out. I'll have a word with somebody. I think, yeah, it is, you know, worth pointing all of that out, that the explosion of the young players hasn't happened this season. It's another season where that hasn't happened. But the manager's been become very much the results business and getting that side settled, getting them playing. That's been the thing that's made all the difference. And I keep saying it right the way through that side. There's, you know, a number of sides, a number of players have also performed well in a bit part sense. You know, Pedro, Willian turned up when he absolutely had to, and I expect a big performance from him in the cup final as well. Right the way through, it's an achievement. It's a huge achievement really for the club and for the manager off the back of this season. It shouldn't, because it's become a little bit of a procession, because Spurs had a rally but couldn't quite get there. It shouldn't really be looked down upon. That's my sort of issue, the wrong way, but sort of following Leicester, not having it be a big ding-dong thing until the end of the season, all of that sort of stuff, I think it means that people can sort of shrug their shoulders a bit, but they shouldn't get to Rebecca.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the Europe thing as well. I mean, I've said it a bunch of times, and I do stand by that point. But in the same respect, Mourinho's second consecutive title the first time round, the 05-06, Chelsea got knocked out of Europe very early on then, you know, in the first like knockout round. So they didn't technically have a huge amount of Europe to focus on. So I do understand that to a degree, but, you know, there is the thing of, I do agree with you, people thinking from a, you know, probably the turn of the year, it was fairly clear Chelsea were going to be champions. And I think people have kind of been like, oh, you know, Chelsea this, they've not had anything else to worry about, and or, you know, Conte's just playing these players, there isn't youth coming through. Well, at the end of the day, the time to blood the youth was last season, after the, you know, so-called big names stopped playing. And that was when Abramovich should have stood up and said, I am backing Mourinho here. The players are a disgrace. Let him play the kids for the rest of the season and see what happens. If the kids prove themselves, they'll stay on. If not, we will influx and bring in, you know, new star names. I can afford it. But like you said, Conte had no choice. He couldn't be faffing about with trying to blood somebody from the under-18s or under-21s this season, because he has a job to protect as well. So he has to come in and do the business. And maybe next season we'll see it. Maybe we won't. It depends, in Conte's head, how long the project doesn't see this. Do any Chelsea managers or any football managers really see, far maybe Pochettino and Klopp in the Premier League, a hugely long-term project? I don't know. So if you are trying to win as much as you can in a 3-4 year period, why would you bother with the kids in the most cynical way possible?
Okay, thanks so much to Rebecca again throughout the season for talking us through what Chelsea have been doing. We're at the towards the end of 50-50 football season here, so thank you very much to her. But also this week, obviously, thank you to her, thank you to Les, thank you to Gito, and thank you to Robbie, and to John and me, you know what I mean? Let's remember who's putting the hard yards in here. It's been a terrific show. Hope you've enjoyed it massively. A few more games to go, scattered throughout the week. The season is nearly over, and at least the top four picture gives us something to play for on the look forward to next weekend.